Some guy in an alleyway.
It used to be like a punchline in the 80s and shit when I was a kid, and I didn't understand who he was. But
millennials have no idea who Don Hill
I
is.
Barely have any idea
I
who he was. But he
tiny
was.
Tiny Bubbles, is it?
Yeah, he was a punchline to a bunch of jokes like in the 80s, like the Don Rickles set. I think he came up in like roasts and stuff a lot.
Meanwhile, the guy's probably, you know, living in Hawaii, surrounded by tiny bubbles. What's not to like? Oh, sure. Well,
Mark, are you
maybe not literally.
I am.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, thanks.
Little warm up.
Yeah, appreciate that.
I like it. Okay. Some Don Ho talk for the masses.
Yeah, everybody out there is like, what?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I almost was.
We need the needle scratch at the end of it.
Everybody's going to go eat some poi now.
Yeah.
Have you ever had poi?
I'm pondering it.
On that incredibly exciting note, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
Kevin.
And I'm Mark.
Somebody likes it. I knew that time since you just dropped that. You just dropped it. Just dropped us in so quickly in the beginning there. It's like trying to keep my eye on you. See, I got my eye on you.
We have a wily producer.
It's his week this week to do the record, so he's just all cocksure about everything today. So yeah. That's what I'm seeing. So, but well, you know, carrying on with Mark, a couple weeks ago he introduced us to the new Monkees song, and I was reading about that. There's an actual album.
Well, they have a bunch of collaborators.
So that's what I wanted to talk about, the people that like wrote songs for this, which, by the way, Rolling Stone gave 3.5 out of 5 stars to. Then I saw another thing that gave it 4 out of 5.
Well, of course they did. It's from the 60s originally.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, I went and looked for a couple of reviews because, you know, like, it's generally getting positive reviews. But then again, the writers are like Rivers Cuomo. There's a song that's Noel Gallagher and Paul Weller.
Did you read the interview?
That actually sounds really interesting.
A lot of it sounds interesting.
Okay. It was on either Slate or Salon, but did you read the interview with, and I can't remember which Monkee it was. It was one of the surviving ones, obviously.
I would assume.
It would be longer.
He claimed that the Monkees songbook is like the third best one after the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
Well, no, I did not see that.
Probably sounds like Nicky Nolan would say something like that.
It could have been. I don't remember who it was, but I was just like, balls, dude.
Yeah, that's right. Ballsy.
Also not correct.
There are some good songs, especially sure, like if you get past, if you get into like, you know, album cuts and stuff like that. There's some really good shit out there, but I think some of it is definitely tied to sense really of its time in a way that the Beatles don't. And so it's hard to, you know, as good as the Zombies are, they definitely sound like, you know, 1967.
For sure.
You know, but the Beatles.
The Troggs,
sure. What did they do? They did like a
Wild Thing.
I was going to say Wild Thing, right?
Yeah. And A Girl Like You.
Love Is All Around You was the Troggs.
Well, there's a lot of really great music from that era that I enjoy listening to very much, but it is real fucking tied to that era.
You know, when you were saying that there was a collaboration and a bunch of different artists chipped in, I meant to ask. I just assume, or for the longest time, I would assume that anytime there was a collaboration, that Matthew Sweet had a song on it. That's probably showing my age a little bit. But by the same token, like that guy did a shit ton of collaborative stuff for a while. Like every Relief thing, like
prominent bands to play with him on his project too.
He's like the.
He's a music geek.
He's like the Jeffrey Ross. He's like what Jeffrey Ross is to roast. Like he is to like collaborative records. Yeah, kind of. Except without shitting all over everybody in the room, I guess.
I don't know. You've never been there.
Yeah,
that's true. Maybe that's true.
You wouldn't think that he would with you know, his last name is Sweet. You want to just assume he's a sweet guy.
Like vulnerable and whatnot, at least lyrically.
But Matthew Vulnerable is not. It's a little harder to say.
And frankly, yeah, like a little.
But he's looking for his
porn name. And he's work.
Yeah, there's no like, doing nothing but spooning videos. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure those go over really well.
He's the inner spoon.
Exactly.
That's why he got out of that industry and moved on over to music.
Anyway.
He wasn't making much of a career.
Now I'm uncomfortable. That's a great story, Shane.
Well, I just thought it was interesting. They have all these interesting people playing on that, so I just wanted to be like, who knew? I mean, you know why they put that album out? It's the 50th anniversary of them getting together
You mean them being
being like recruited? Put together, being recruited, right? That just sounds so
hatched.
Like a long time ago. Like damn,
it is a long time ago.
It's crazy shit.
Yeah. They're like it would be if that band was a person, it would be getting you know maybe they'd be talking about an ARP card.
Yeah, I was going to say, they'd be getting mailers from AARP.
Yeah, right, yeah. They'd just be like, and then looking, you know, and have the faraway gaze at parks, like stuff like that.
Feeding pigeons.
Yeah, also the pigeons.
It sounds a little early for that to start happening, but it's like with the way you're saying right now is like how somebody that's like 20 thinks that somebody that is 50 or like somebody
know,
that's
true.
Like 7 when they think
like... Dude, you're what, like...
Hey, hey, not cool. Anyway,
see, it's not fun. It's not fun.
Yeah, but they're not here,
I
so
think
whatever.
They toyed with the idea of naming the album "Feeding Pigeons," but it didn't go down.
Sure.
Yeah, it's not. It's not quite as rock star as I think they want to come off. Instead, it's like "Get Happy" or something like that. I don't know. There's an explanation.
It's a "Don't Dress Like Gorillas."
Yes, exactly that.
That old tome. Anyway, yeah, I do want to. Now I am kind of curious. I will pick it up.
So this week I have brought upon you guys the debut album from Fan Farlow.
Oh, yes.
And I'm interested to find out what you guys think. I think at least a couple of you, this was new for you.
I'd never heard of them.
I had heard that first song before, and I'd heard the name before. I read something on the internet, and I couldn't figure out. It was like when I was getting search results, and there were all these like review aggregators, but the sentence that I could never track down the whole sentence. But this is sort of sums up how I feel about this. I think it's a very easy to listen to album. It's quite enjoyable in a lot of ways. But this, it's like, well, of course, Arcade. If you put Arcade Fire and Dvochka Have a Baby, it's called Fan Farlow. And I was like, that is it. I thought that this band was Dvochka for a long time. Like that the first song on the record, Pilot, something about
I'm a pilot.
I'm a pilot. Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was good, but
it's a terrific record, but it did kind of bring out the inner 70s A&R guy in me, in that I was like,
this
don't hear a hit.
I don't hear a single.
Yeah.
They're all really good songs, and it hangs together as a record.
It starts blending together after a little while. There's not a lot of dynamic diversity. It's taken individually. Every single song on the record is great, but I feel like how I felt in the first four or five songs of the record, like where I was like, man, this is really amazing, like... I realized, like, I started tuning out some songs, even though I realized when I'd come back and pay attention, I'm like, oh, this is just as good as anything else in the song. There wasn't as much, which is interesting because the last song on the record, the bonus track, actually really does change fuck up with the dynamics a little bit and actually has a really, like, poppy chorus. And it's the one that they, like, almost didn't make the cut of the record. Like, if they had thrown it into the middle of the record, I think it would have gone a long way with kind of mixing stuff up. Like how that song Luna kind of mixes stuff up a little bit.
The interesting thing about this record is, like, to Mark's point at the top of the mention, I did know the album already. This was one that that I did come into contact with when it came out, and there are a number of tracks on here that I think are, like, just go down really easy without being saccharine. And I do totally get the idea that they're like, they kind of get painted with the British Arcade Fire brush. Like, that kind of makes sense.
I thought that before I even read that.
Yeah.
Like, I wrote it in my notes. I was like, it's sort of if you combine Arcade Fire, early Arcade Fire with Dvochka. And then I read that right like 10 minutes later. I was like, okay, so yeah, I'm not crazy here.
Yeah, yeah, no, and yeah, and I mean, I think that's it's sort of, you know, it's certainly a fair comparison.
I don't think
to make.
That's a bad thing to say. That I don't feel like that's saying that they're derivative, because I don't.
Well, they do count Arcade Fire as an influence for sure. So.
No, if anything, it's like I kind of feel like the general gist of a lot of the review content is like these guys get dinged a little bit because they're as accessible as they are, and it's like they're not as aloof as Arcade Fire. Like,
well, and
in a weird way.
And I agree with what you're saying. I read that too, and I saw a number of reviews that were slagging them simply because
kind of.
They weren't
like
tortured.
It's never like a whole slag.
Yeah,
like
no. I think there's an appreciation. I mean, the one, you know, and they were getting lumped in with like Baroque pop or stuff like that. Like, look, man, just because you have like strings on your stuff.
The record is a little bit orchestral. Like, there's actually the only other like ding I would give it, and it's not even really a ding; it's just my personal taste. I'm not that crazy about horns being all over a record, and I guess like their trumpet player is like a member of the band, so is on most of the songs.
You know, one thing that occurred to me on that front, Ryan and Shane too, it's like there are moments when the horns on this record are a little Beulah-esque.
I wanted to say that to you too.
Yeah, yeah.
When you pulled up today, I was actually going back and listening to Beulah to make sure I wasn't crazy just thinking about this because I haven't listened to that band in probably 10 years.
Well, I was like, is that Bill Swan? Like he has a very distinctive style.
It was like Beulah with like kind of mixed a little bit with like Latter-day Father John Misty, fronted by David Byrne. Because like his voice, that's just the timbre of his voice sounds like David Byrne a little bit.
I could see that. What I almost see more, as long as we're playing the comparison game, is the guy whose name I'm not going to remember who fronts Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. He has a very distinctive timbre and style, and the lead singer of Fanfarlo, like, it feels like they're of a similar mindset, even though the music itself is not at all similar.
I think if you go and I listen to some of their other albums, too, I think his voice gets a little more idiosyncratic on those subsequent records. And this, he sounds like he's a little more croonering to me.
Owensworth, again, Alec Owensworth.
But I definitely thought the St. Beulah thing because of the trumpet all the way through. And I was like, what was that band from San Francisco that they started with the B? I was like, oh, yeah, Beulah. Great. I did the same thing. I was like, great band. But I love horns and music. I love the shit
Beulah's
out of it.
I was a manager back in the day and would call him for advice when I was running up against stuff. And I was like brand new to doing that. Like, anyway, just side note.
Yeah, it's a funny deal, and it just goes to show you that, like, I mean, I do think to this band's credit, like, horns can be used in a non cheesy, super over the top way, and it plays here.
No,
like,
no, they're tasteful and like they serve the songs. It's just that they're on just about every song, and I tend to like them a little more sparingly.
I think there's trumpet on just about every song. There's not like horn section
well,
stuff,
no, but
and
trumpet.
Like. Yeah, I mean, that shit.
It's not Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Yeah, that shit doesn't bother me personally. Yeah, but I didn't walk away thinking that they were overtly an incredibly derivative band. It just seemed like, at the time, like there were a lot of people fishing coming from the same well a little bit.
Well, speaking of fishing or wells, Mark, you brought this record to us, so like let's get what your take on it was. You've introduced it kind of, and what was your thought?
I first heard of Fanfarlo listening to Bob Boylan one morning in June, I think, of 2009, and they had the UK release that they were playing online that you could stream for free online, and I remember streaming that album over and over and over again. And then started following them online, and I told you guys I had some show and tell. So when their U.S. release was coming up, they had a limited release of, I can't remember now how many. I think they may have done upwards of 3,000 of these little box sets.
That's a frightening picture that's on the
isn't
includes,
it?
It includes some games. So if you open that
the
up.
The Fanfarlo games.
There's
that's
a,
my
there's
like fucking
a
dice games
die,
and shit.
It's my favorite Olympiad.
And there's a bunch of different games in there. So anyway,
like shit that they made up, like to
yeah,
play the songs
all,
and stuff.
All kind of.
Okay, now that's a little bit crazy.
I've
I'm gonna set this down.
I've never played any of the games. I've kind of tried to keep it in collector shape or whatever.
So it's a very It's a what would you say the volume is on this box, Mark? It's like it's a little square about an inch deep.
Yeah,
with,
I mean, it's,
with variety
it's,
of
it's
of different
like 7-inch square. Yeah, so those are the playing pieces there.
Oh, here's the board. Okay.
And then there's like a little playing board. So anyway, I saw that they hand assembled these. The band did.
Wow.
And I was just, obviously they didn't hand print them or anything, but they hand assembled the boxes. I kind of got on board with that, and all that long drawn out story to say that I really like these guys a lot. I've seen them play a couple of times at South by Southwest. I think the first time I saw them was probably 2010, and I think the last time they played was 2012.
That sounds right. They were here for a few years, like 2 or 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was good shit.
I want to play... cut off the album called The Walls Are Coming Down, and the video for this features a gentleman doing Houdini's straitjacket escape act.
I like this song quite
a bit.
They
actually would tour. When they were touring not long after that came out, they actually had another stunt artist that would do the same escape act on stage while they did this song.
It was a Houdini deal,
yeah. They swallowed it whole, they went farther gone, far, far the same lies we all have the same shoes to fill.
Somebody had to cut that dude down. You know what I'm saying?
The walls are coming down. Eventually, he'll have to come down with them.
Yeah, but they could be going down at a very, very slow rate. I mean, he wasn't. He said the walls are coming down.
From the ceiling, if the walls come down.
Well, I know, but I'm saying the walls. There's no telling. I mean, the walls will eventually come down. As you know, that's sort of that's going to happen. But what we're saying is that if he didn't get cut down, it might be several years before they come down, and he's just stuck up on the fucking ceiling.
Like you're coming down at like an inch a week or something?
I don't know. He doesn't ever actually say like how long it's going to take before the walls come down.
And
also, I don't necessarily know that it was as literal as that.
Can I be the first to say that, like, what a terrible song that would be if it was just specifics about, like, which walls and how long they would take.
Coming down.
Like, yeah,
it's
like,
a little shaky. You're going to crack it.
Yeah, yeah. This wall's going to come down about 2 years from now if you don't take care of it. So
Bob Beale out there.
Exactly. on a more somber note, more seriously, like, it's, another example, like, of... or an example of what I consider to be a pretty quintessential Fanfarlo track. Like,
sure.
Like, easy to follow, stays in your head for a while.
Really good song. I'm
they're not trying to do too much.
On the Arcade Fire thing first pass around.
Well, part of what happens, that song is in the middle, getting toward the last part of the record. And that's what I was saying before. That one really stood out to me because the chorus is one of the stronger choruses on the album. A lot of his melodies kind of blend. Not to say that there are no melodies, because there are, but it's just a lot of the songs are very, very, very similar in their makeup. And so taken one by one, I think they stand. That song would have stood out. That's why it's standing out more for you now.
Circling back to before we listen to the clip, Mark had mentioned the video. So just if you're following along and you have questions, like we were alluding to the fact that in the video, there is there's the guy who's hanging from the ceiling while the band plays, and it's
in a straitjacket
doing the old Houdini trick. And when I was watching it, and this is so sad, like when I was watching it, like they shoot it like it's all happening at the same time. And all I could think of is like, that guy's been up there forever. This song is really long. Somebody needs to take care of this. Like, but he seems to be fine.
That if you can get out of a straitjacket while upright, can probably do it while hanging from the ceiling too.
But I bet all your blood rushes to your head and makes you dizzy.
Yeah, come on.
I mean.
Anyway,
can I say I will say this? I'm really, really glad that I heard that song before I watched the video, because I like that song quite a bit. It's one of my favorite on the record, and I like the record quite a bit. But it just brought me right back into how much I hated that clothing from that time period.
It's very 2009.
It is. It yeah. Like all Mumford
and Sons. Which I thought was a very
like,
specific yearly reference.
No. In between, look, if you worked in bars, especially that's when Mumford and Sons broke.
I'm sure.
With the suspenders.
Yeah.
High vest.
I was going to say.
No. That's
the,
a couple years later. That was sort of the beginning. That was before. Like that's.
They did look like they should be consuming like craft cocktails with like homemade bitters.
Yeah. Well, not. It didn't get quite like it like that as that stuff. You know, as things like that tattoos tend to get more and more and more and more precious. That's where the handlebar mustaches and the arm garters and stuff. This is like just in the beginning where basically they look like they belong in like a painting, like an American Gothic. Like it's like the guy, whatever that guy was wearing in that painting, you know, turn of the century, Oklahoma.
Hey, do you
want to
shave? Yeah, it was a thing for a while. Like that type of clothing was a thing for a while. And yeah, to your point, Shane, it did, you know, it was a scourge that did worsen. But
for my next birthday, I'm asking for jodhpurs.
Oh, jodhpurs. Yeah. Sure.
Now jodhpurs never really came around. Yeah. So now we'll take it from like turn of the century, salt of the earth to like. Basically, like right before World War One started, like the kind of stuff you play that you wore during a fox hunt.
So there've been a lot. Like so, the interesting thing was that you know. So I dug around as I am wont to do, and looked for some takes, some hot takes on this record from when it came out. And you know, frankly, like a lot of them seemed to be either along the lines of what we've already discussed, which is to say that they were like, well. It's very pleasant, but there's just something that's not. It's either wasn't edgy enough for the reviewer, which happens
but
sometimes.
That's so stupid.
I agree, completely stupid. Or they were like, "This is actually really great." Well, then you go poke around on sites like Metacritic, where like the reviews are overwhelmingly positive. Like,
well, Metacritic's
like,
an aggregator, right?
It is an aggregator, but they'll also like they'll also include little snippets of things that. That were set in a certain publication at the time, some of which are out of print by the time that we get around to them. But still, like, it is kind of interesting just to see like a snapshot review of what people think. Well, one of the sites that one thing that's kind of interesting to me about or fun to me about doing this podcast is the idea that occasionally when I'm digging up old sources just to sort of see what people said in the moment, that sometimes we find one that is. That doesn't always rise to the top, and for whatever reason, it's like it gets a lot of eyeballs. And so, anyway, I found it. But it had in the past, it's been that Mark's Friggin site, which I always thought was really funny, like the Air Miami stuff that we dug up. In this case, I found a review from a site called Drowned in Sound, which I did not know. And I won't go through a lot here, but suffice it to say that basically this guy says. And I'll just sort of get an idea where one reviewer stands. He says, any big Ed Harcourt fans out there? Anyone perturbed that Ed seemed to get devastatingly straightforwardly right with his indie album, Strangers, shortly before deciding no one was listening and pretending to retire? And he uses that as a means to sort of set up that I guess... Fanfarlo was known for sort of having this DIY aesthetic coming into this record, and then
well,
this one.
Their own records, except for this one, I guess they got distribution from Atlantic.
Right. Well, and they recorded it in Connecticut, and they had a big producer who'd worked on some big stuff, and so this is this guy's way of like, kind of throwing stones at that idea. But it read to me like, or it felt like to me like, it was a little bit of weak sauce. I was like, and essentially the precept of his review was like, you know, he ends. I'm really not gonna read you like any of the four paragraphs before it. But he says he closes with "Ho hum, I like this. It's cheery. Who needs profundity when you've got summer?" And part of me says, "Hey, fuck you, buddy. Like it's a fun record.
Like
a dick. He does kind
of. There's
a
lot
like
of writers like when they make it about themselves,
right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I was like, who doesn't like summer? Like. You know, old people don't want to get too hot. So, like, other than that, like, I think you, by all means, like, if there's something cool that feels like it, like, that feels like it's simultaneously well put together and, you know, God forbid, optimistic, that's not a terrible thing.
That just sounds like an offshoot, like a direct result of, like, how, like reviewing has changed in the past, like, 12, 15 years because of... the snarkiness of Pitchfork.
Well, and I do think to your point, like it's one of these things where sometimes the reviewer feels like that's how they make their bones on being like it's kind of the Lester Bangs aesthetic, which is like, you know, if we use the almost famous version of Lester Bangs, which is not really Lester Bangs, it's like be merciless. like that's how they you show people that you're on the level. And so, yeah, I think that there are – it's not really – frankly, none of these, like as I mentioned before, are really takedown pieces. But, like, sometimes I think they slag this band a little unnecessarily because they're unpleasant.
It's like, unnecessary slag. And sometimes I think there's a flip side. I think that you'll see, like, a – I think you'll see a reviewer that doesn't necessarily love, like, whatever, like, we'll say, like, late 90s pop confection. At that time, there were a lot of those things, you know, Britney Spears and Backstreet Boys and stuff like that. And you would see them get better reviews than that person, I think, would want to give them, but they didn't want people – that knew their byline or knew what their name was in the industry to be like, you know, like they give them too easy of a time. Whereas like somebody else, they'll give them a little bit harder of a time because they insert themselves into it, like their own musical taste. But people that hang out with them know their musical taste. Having been friends with a fair amount of record reviewers in my life, like I can see how that could go both ways.
Like, do you think that has something to do with the fact that like those artists and the labels they were on had a lot of muscle? And the other thing that occurred to me as I was listening to this record, which is really good, is like, why the fuck haven't I heard this? Well, I mean, they put out most of their stuff on their own label, and it takes a company to really push a band to the next level, as far as I'm concerned.
Not necessarily, not as much. I mean, I think it's are you out there looking for what you're looking for. I mean, like,
I brought up two things. Like, A, like, well, you know, I mean, like the pop confection stuff that maybe, you know, overachieved its reviews.
To your point, I don't think that necessarily people were reviewing them to giving them better reviews because of the label muscle. I definitely don't think that at all. I just think that I think that if anything,
they're trying to, like, the reviewers themselves were trying to prove that they're not just a one trick pony and they only like a certain type of thing.
Yeah, to some degree.
So, I think we've wagered long enough and batted and chatted about this record. Mark, do you want to pick a second track?
Yeah, let's pick a second track. It's going to be the first track, which Shane commented on early on in the show. I'm a Pilot.
The tape machine is buzzed. From all its spinning round and round, I've scribed all my will. I've bitten all my nails to the bone, like a stone. You call.
I think I have something for those really driving, drum-laden types of songs, like Fleetwood Mac's Tusk, you know, and just I really
what,
like.
Oh, you mean you're
oh,
drawn
I get what
to
you're
them.
Saying?
Yeah,
I was like, what do you have for them?
I know, no, that's what I thought too. I thought you were a pitch man, like, hey, so do you like doing these kind of songs? Well, I got a new instrument for you.
He's got theremin for them.
I was thinking it was going to be something like that.
Yeah, what is the instrumentation at the really beginning of that? Do you know? Like, I mean, it just sounds like a stomping sort of
I think
noise.
They're probably doing some stomping. There's some tambourine.
Yeah, there's like it sounds like it's a bass drum with a mallet.
See, I thought they were sampling The Stroke by Billy Squier at first, but no,
and I like
not.
That song too.
I love that song.
I really do like those really just kind of driving beat songs.
Well, as you know, we talk a lot on this show about the power of the opening track and like its ability to set up the rest of the record. And sometimes it ends up being an outlier because they'll put a really great song on the front end and the rest of it doesn't necessarily hold muster. But I think
a la Susie and the Banshees.
Well, right. But yeah. But I mean, I think that
the rest of the album
was
good.
It holds muster.
But the bar was set really high.
Sorry. Yeah, so anyway, so to the point, like I think with this record, this song does a really good, like, you know, does a really like fair job of giving a prelude to what the rest of the record is going to feel like. And not to say that all the songs are the same, but it does like kind of send you down that path.
It does have a very consistent sound.
No, there's sure. there's not I mean, a Shane, there's Shane's, not a speed metal song in the middle of this. No,
that,
record.
And Shane's mentioned that that there's not a whole lot of dynamic going on
in tempo.
Dynamic variation
in tempo too.
Yeah.
I mean,
but the thing about this song is that there is a unique dynamic to this song, in my opinion.
This one,
you've got that really dry, almost acoustic, just backing percussion, and then in the middle you get these swashes of orchestral kind of flourishes.
Well, this one breaks the mold, I think, from a lot. This one and the last song, the two bookends, like kind of break the mold from what a lot of this album is kind of written in a little bit of a template. Not to say that's bad, because it's not like cookie cutter from each one. It's just there's just a very cohesive, just like a template, there's like a mold almost. You
very
know?
Cohesive style, I think. Is what
sure,
you're
sure. Yeah, I mean they sound like Fanfarlo.
Oh, show.
It's good.
Okay, so we ready to go to the middle?
We are.
Intermission time. All right, let's spend a few minutes with. And welcome to A Few Minutes With, where we'll be talking tonight about Ted Leo and the Pharmacist, Bottled in Cork.
Oh, you just went like straight from like this like
exaggerated game show host.
It was like a cross with like Casey Kasem.
Well, a little. Yeah, I did find out that they're bringing back the Match Game, and all I can think about is like, yeah, all I can think about is like that super tall, like extra tall microphone that Gene
with
Rayburn
like the
had.
Little ball on the top.
Yeah. So tonight, for A Few Minutes With, we're not going to be playing a song. We'll be playing a blank. I'm just kidding. So, yeah, we are doing the it's Trip in the Wayback Machine. We are doing Ted Leo and the Pharmacist, Bottled in Cork. It is a somewhat unique video and premise, and the track's pretty interesting too. So I would like to share it with
Let's
you.
Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
There was a resolution pending on the United Nations floor. Our only members do the question, what's a peacekeeping force for? Who believed it would be solved in a day? No one walked out of that building on the 8th of May. And the turn suited one and way. I got a message from my sister. She just had a kid. I take it to Copenhagen. Yeah, she did. My head could start on a Canadian. He called me a skid. Throw the charge for Roman. International's well hit. Someone is listening on my phone. Will I show up on the grid? Me, I'm just a loner. The world full of kids. Egos and ears. A year before and we were getting bottled in car. On television, Congress crying about abuse in the park. I told the bartender. We were all from New York. Sometimes a path of least resistance.
And as you might imagine, if you took a moment and you probably listened to the clip, but if you pull up the video for Bottled in Cork by Ted Leo and the Pharmacist, what you're going to find is pretty much your standard issue, you know, regular, straightforward
indie rock video.
Yeah. There's no. Anyway, it's
some
a little
theater magnate shows up, tells them they need to achieve immortality by making a shitty musical.
Yeah, it's super silly. It's like probably sillier than it is funny, but it's pretty
it's
silly.
Kind of a companion piece to Yellow Tango's Sugar Cube video.
I thought the same thing. Yeah.
It's a whole narrative wink wink nudge nudge thing. Like,
well, and it's kind of, you know, and it is like, you know, it is a it's a punky band teasing the band that do things that they don't.
I think it's a dig on Green Day. Yeah.
Well, no,
really,
but there was also the once a little bit. Like, there were a couple of different. Mostly, it seemed like it was Green Day, but there were a couple in there. That's a good song too, though.
It is a good song,
but it's hard to pay attention to the song when there's.
I thought the same thing too, and I was like, I've discovered that whenever we do this, I guess whenever MTV was around. Either I had like a better attention span at the time, or they would just put on the songs that I liked in rotation, and so I would be able to like look at the video and then kind of like build up to liking the song. Because we only have like one pass through.
Yeah,
here.
And it also could have been.
And I can't always pay attention to the song.
Yeah, and I mean, in fairness, like back in the day, it's like your filters were different, right? Like, so you see something that gets presented to you visually and musically at the same time in a certain way. And like, to your point, like, yeah, you get to saturate, like you can baste in it a little bit on repeated viewings. But also, well, I think it's like it's easier to like kind of your opinion evolves over time.
I think also like I think back then, like appreciation of recorded music, I think it was a lot. I was paying attention to a lot fewer things, like fewer things that like the melody to some degree,
sure,
and the vocals, maybe the lyrics, not like,
well,
the instrumentation.
I feel like videos back then were kind of like an event. Like I remember like getting really excited because MTV was showing the world premiere of Phil Collins' cover of You Can't Hurry Love. And I was like all excited, and I watched it, and I was like, oh, I got to be here for history. You know, granted, I was like eight,
really?
Or something. But
maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Paul F. Tompkins.
Is that of, who that cut that comic was,
yeah,
at the beginning? Yeah, I knew
he's
I recognized
lost some weight.
Him.
Yeah, of Mr. Show fame, was the smarmy, you got to do a musical guy. But it's a silly video. If you haven't had a chance to watch it, I certainly recommend.
But if you want to learn the art of the art and craft of acting, like, go ahead and tune in.
Or transforming your song into a musical.
Yes, there's a lot of Olivier.
There's some really,
yeah, Brando.
Nice,
yes,
yeah. Dance
Brando.
Lessons. There's some wonderful dance lessons that go on in that.
At the very least, I figured that it might offer a brief interlude from our take on Finn Farlow. And I don't know. I mean, I guess in some ways there's dancing in it, so maybe it's just like Finn Farlow.
Is there dancing? I guess there's dancing in Finn Farlow.
I mean, there's dancing in my mind.
There's dancing in your room by yourself when you're like 15.
Sure.
To
What's
Finn
that
Farlow.
Morrissey video? The last of the famous international playboys, and there's some just kid just like dancing by himself,
yeah,
in a room. Anyway, we're getting off track.
Anyway, yeah. So that was a track off the Brutalist Bricks. Called Bottle and Cork by Ted Leo and the Pharmacists.
Good
Look
song.
It up, buy it twice. Can anybody, here's a little quiz for you. Can anybody guess the, well, Mark probably can. So You are
disqualified.
Exempt. Can either of the other two of you guess the first name of the guy from Sigur Rós's dad? What's his dad's first name?
Lars.
And a fine choice, but no.
Goodwin?
Yeah, we won't. And also a fine choice, but no. Anyway, we won't go on with that. But
Thor?
It is not Thor.
Steve?
Yes, it's Steve. Big Carl. Anyway, no, yeah. So here's why I bring that up, is that Sigur Rós is sort of involved in the cover art for this record, and one of the things that I always forget about Iceland is the way that they do last names, which is that you are the son of
or the daughter of your
father. So like, yeah, so his last name is Burgesson, because presumably his father's name is Burgess. And his sister...
Wait, Burgess Meredith is his dad? Is that what you're
saying? B-I-R-G-I-S.
Get a hold of yourself, Rock. So, yeah. Go make a weird record.
His name was actually Burgesson. Wouldn't his son's name be Burgesson-son?
Oh, no, his name...
It becomes the surname, I think.
Yeah,
like,
the dude from Sigur Rós, his last name is Burgesson, and his sister's name, who is on the cover, is Burgess' daughter. And so, like, that's the way that works. And I always forget that little quirk. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So when they were looking, apparently, according to Wikipedia, when they were trying to figure out the cover, the singer, you know, John Poor, I don't remember what the guy's name is, suggested his sister to check the Czech photographer who was doing the art. And anyway... Yeah, that's the little sister of the dude from Sigur Rós on the cover of the Finn Farlow record.
It's a creepy ass fucking photo, man.
It is. It is. And to that point, like on the special box edition that Mark was passing around the garage a minute ago. Like, it's got a picture of her and, like, or the picture of the alternate mask. And I'm trying to think of, like, there's something else that reminds me of, and I'm not quite getting it right now, but it's like sort of it's an old school, like almost operatic, like sketchy bird mask, right? Like,
it looks like she was in the Spy versus Spy and Mad Magazine back in the day, but it does, but
quite creepier than Spy versus Spy.
Sure.
Anyway, but so a little bit of history for you there, a little bit of visual.
Thank you. I feel enhanced.
Sure. So we are back on Reservoir, and Mark, let me ask you an honest question. Like, so you picked this record. How long had it been since you last listened to it when you decided that we were going to do it?
Less than 2 weeks.
Okay. Is it still in semi-regular rotation?
This is a regular rotation for me.
Okay, right.
Definitely
on.
Is. Not so much their later albums.
I like their second one, all right. I didn't really get a chance to listen to their newest one.
They had one after this, then an EP, and then in 2014 they put out another full-length album. And they just haven't... They're good, but for whatever reason, I don't know if it's... historical or whatever reason, to me this album sticks, and I like to listen to it a lot.
I feel like it happened at a period, and this may be a very similar thing where it's like I'm projecting backed out against my own experience, like where I sort of was in my life, but I feel like there's this came in a pocket of a number of albums that came out that had a little bit of staying power.
Well, you kind of cycle through that way. Like, you go through periods where you just, like, get into a bunch of different newish stuff. And
that's
possible. And then you don't for a while.
No, that's true. And I mean, we are well-versed on the track that sometimes when something is everywhere, I'll kind of intentionally back away from it. But...
Yeah. That is true. Like, that's true.
I mean, I was really into this album when some things were going down in my life with my family that were really traumatic, and so it carries that significance for me, you know, when I listen to it.
Well, this will probably stick with you for the rest of your days.
It always does, yeah.
So I will say that one track that we haven't spent any time talking about that I actually like is probably one that I just really connected with pretty immediately on this record was Drowning Men. Like... I don't know. Like, Shane, one thing we haven't asked you that sometimes you just offer up is, like, what bubbled up to the top for you?
I didn't really get a chance to, like, sit and ruminate on these lyrics. I mean, I pretty much said, like, how I feel about it. Like,
and I'm not asking you on that particular track. Like, was there a track that we haven't listened to yet that you thought, okay, maybe this is the one that I really
connected with? Comets, I think. Comet or Comets.
Comets.
Yeah, no, that song killed. Like, there's just really interesting stuff in it. I mean, again, the whole album is good for the most part. You know, it's hard to say things after, like, those first few initial... Because it is such an even-keeled album, and there's so... Like, the flaws aren't apparent, really, and the good stuff is, like...
And they're not overwrought. Like,
yeah,
it's like...
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's where we talked about that they run into... That's where folks have been critical, is because they're not plunging the depths of despair.
Well, I don't think that, like, it's a remarkably consistent album. But sometimes to its detriment, and sometimes definitely...
to its strength?
I think they're sort of the fucking yin-yang, dude.
Oh, man, they're all up in there in the yin-yang.
Yeah, you know, man.
And Brad?
What is it? Harold T. Wilkins or How To... Shit.
Hey, dude, yeah, that one.
Not try to play it.
That song.
I liked that song, and it's got a really long title that I don't remember all of, but it's something like how I learned...
Harold T. Wilkins or How To Wait For A Very Long Time.
Yeah, not to stop worrying about the bomb and something else, Kubrick.
The one where Rachel locks herself out of the apartment.
So, yeah.
So here's a
and I liked the opening and closing track.
Here's a capsule on this. This came from Clash Magazine's review on this record.
Like the band?
No, not the band. Oh. The magazine. They said, and it's a couple of it's seven paragraphs long, so we all just need to settle in. Just kidding. It's a couple of sentences long. They said, Fanfarlo have mastered the ability to merge a sincere melancholy with a passion that really connects. Strings zapping you like electric currents in the sea of kitchen sink instrumentation. I'm not exactly sure what all that means. Leading Balthazar's open hook vocal refrains. Reservoir is ample testimony of their talents and marks the long-awaited arrival proper of one of the country's most promising, in parentheses, not so new bands. So anyway, this is that is the sort of, you know, stick the landing ending from a British publication of what they thought of this record when it came out at the time. And I mean, it's like we're looking at this a little bit down the road, obviously from America, but
America,
yes,
M.
Yes. Yeah.
It's apostrophe M.
Apostrophe M. Okay, right.
Yeah.
Oops. But anyway, yeah, but again, it's like I'm not at all surprised, not just cuz I know you, Mark, but also cuz I've spent some time with this record that it's one that could end up in regular rotation. And at the same time, it's like I kind of almost like it is not at all similar in what it brings to the table sonically to say the Travis record, Ryan, that you did a couple of weeks ago. But I totally get the idea that like, this is one of these bands that like, there are some things that are really promising on this record that you could see playing out additionally into a whole career arc that in this case, Mike, it might be more of a, like a highlight moment and followed by some other stuff that just, you know, didn't necessarily fulfill the promise that this record did.
Yeah, I can definitely see somebody connecting with this on a really personal way. You know, particularly if it, since they, you know, they're not that well known, there's always that thing where like, you know, I've got my secret brilliant thing that you don't know about, which is always, I don't know, to me like that's always like up the ante for a record a little bit. Anyway, Mark, you want to pick us out another track?
Yeah. Well, you guys mentioned three different tracks there that are all kind of on my list of ones that I'd love to play. So, Kevin, which one would you like to hear?
Well, my favorite is Drowning Men. I think all the others were grand too. So
yeah. Well, why don't we listen to Drowning Men?
Okay.
Solid tune for sure. Shane, I was kind of thinking like Arcade Fire, and then Shane was like, "This kind of sounds like In Between Days."
Well,
by
it's the
Cure.
Chords, it does, and then it has the little piano melody. I mean, they're the same chords. You know.
If Arcade Fire covered In Between Days by the Cure,
it sounded a lot like that.
It might sound a lot like that.
His voice definitely sounds
a
lot like.
I hadn't considered that, but yeah, a little. Yeah.
They should.
with a splash of clap your hands, say yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly that.
Just slow it way down, you know. Yeah.
This is kind of apropos of nothing other than I worked lunch
on
today.
On this show, really?
Well, no, I do that sometimes, believe it or not. But today at work, they had the Muzak station. We pipe in Muzak, and Muzak doesn't necessarily mean like elevator music anymore. But it was like the 80s station, but it was the 80s like top 40 station. And there are so many bands that like, had like big hits in the 80s and probably sold a million or two records that you just never think of anymore.
Sure, that is true. Like Tapao and Heart and Soul.
Tapao, that I actually
Give
like
a
that song.
Bit of heart and soul,
little bit of love to grow.
Yep, just like that.
But no, just, it was just crazy. And then it is totally apropos of nothing. But it made me think. I guess The Cure made me think of it because like bands that kind of flew a little bit under the radar, like you know, and didn't necessarily reach the pop charts all that much,
like R.E.M.
have like a much for much of their career.
Well, sure, but
have a much longer legacy than stuff that like immediately like did really well.
I
and
think
then
to a large degree off. That's true. Yeah, I think that's also like if you're writing for the moment, like it's like pop writers or whatever, like bands or what, if they're writing for that moment rather than just trying to write good music. I think.
Well, and in a more practical sense, I remember listening to an interview with Lou Barlow and they were talking to him about Folk Implosion and he'd had like a big hit with
Natural One.
Yep. And they were like, oh, did that open a lot of doors for you? He was like, no, actually it did the opposite. Like the festivals and bands that I want to play, you know, or bands I want to play with and the festivals I want to play, they don't want like a top 40 band.
Hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the 90s right there, though, man.
It is. And, you know, if you've ever tried to find that track, like, it's very, like, you can only download it as part of the kids' soundtrack, like the entire movie Kids soundtrack, which is a great film. Like,
sure. Disturbing.
Yeah. Disturbing but also. But, I mean, but, like, but a film that of some weight, but, like, yeah, there's no like grabbing a single
a la carte natural
which is
one.
Like which is kind of a testament to the strength of that track in a way, is that like it was part of a film soundtrack that, you know, anyway, that doesn't happen as much anymore.
Yeah, there were a couple other Folk Implosion songs that I liked, but anyway, we're getting off track here. But anyway, yeah. Like no, really good Fan Farlow song.
The whole album is good, but that's why I say it. And I'll stand by this. I've said it numerous times, but I think the songs are a little more powerful when you listen to them one or two at a time rather than a big group of them at once.
Yeah,
unless it's kind of like you're cooking dinner and it's in your background.
Well, and I think we've talked about this before. Like you know, there's not necessarily like a sort of narrative arc to the record, you know, that where it takes you on a journey. It's just a succession of all really good songs.
Yeah, which I don't think there's anything wrong with. It's just, whatever. Sorry, I don't know what I'm saying.
I think for me, you mentioned something, and I can't remember your exact words, but something about, you know, liking bands that don't quite break through, you know, and there's something.
There is something about, like, feeling like you've like got, that. Yeah, you've
and
got your
me,
little.
It's yours.
There's a lot of that here, but I think of it as kind of, like, I've got emotional stock in this band, you know? So like if they go somewhere, I've got some good feeling in that.
Well, and you're like, I was there.
Yeah,
I think a lot of
don't. I've got that to myself. You know, it's something that I can keep. So I'm really glad I was able to share this with you.
Yeah, and I
yeah, appreciate
cool
it.
That you did.
Yeah, it was a great album.
And I have bands like that too. Like this. Yeah, this is a solid pick. So to that end. We've done our like we like at least one of us likes it arc, and then what's next?
Well, first we have to do the song.
Yeah, we've got the newish
the newest song.
Does Ryan have to play a part in this broadcast?
Sometimes
do
you
want to play a part in this broadcast?
Yeah. I don't know, man. I might just tap out.
So what are we doing, Ryan?
I have got, well, it's funny, I heard this song on my local alternative station a couple times,
I
and
like
I'm like,
your
you
voice
know,
cracks
alternative.
Yeah.
No, Michael J. Fox.
Anyway. I actually think it's a pretty solid song, and I kind of hate the video, but it's Spirits by the Strumbellas.
I got guns in my head and they won't go. Spirits in my head and they won't go. I got guns in my head and they won't go. Spirits in my head and they won't go. So
I'll be a dreamer till the day I die. But they say, yo, have a good day, yo. But we're all strange, and maybe we don't want to change. I got guns in my head.
Yeah, Spirits by the Strumbellas. Like, Shane may like that song a little bit. And I like it more than I dislike it.
I may like it?
No, I said you may like it less than I do.
Oh, yeah. No, I'd like dislike it way less, like way more than you do.
Yeah.
I like it a lot less than you do. That's...
I heard that song a few times, and it's moderately catchy, you know.
It's got a catchy enough hook.
Yeah.
But it is straight up a novelty song from like 1996.
Well,
like,
and then I went and watched the video, and I don't know why, but I just want to punch that guy in the face.
Rubs you the wrong way, yeah.
I just want to punch that guy in the face. I don't really have a good reason for it.
There's just this whiny fucking, like, it's all over the place right now. There's like a living like a refugee kind of song that's been on for like the last year, like very similar, like these like fucking whiny.
Well, the timbre of his voice reminded me a little of the guy from Cage the Elephant, and I do like them.
I can't stand them. I don't know.
They've got several songs that I like. I don't like all of them, but
I don't know, man. I'm just not on the page with a lot of the alternative bands that are
alternative. Yes, you're resurrecting that.
Yeah, well, they're thrift store, you know, now, but it's the same fucking idea. You know what? I'll say to this song, like Polyphonics redid it a lot better than you, and they weren't even that fucking good when they did it. So
that's
just kind of how I feel about it.
35 members. Maybe 70.
Wearing like choir robes.
Yeah, but then they had to scale it down to where I think they eventually ended up with like 12, which is where they are now.
I'm not really good with
numbers. Yeah, the per diems on a 35-piece band are probably not
I
so
I played
great.
With them once, and it's when they had the 35-piece choral group, and I was, and plus they had like 12 members too, and I'm like, there's no way like this is going to, you're going to be able to keep this.
It's a bad business.
Yeah. Unsustainable. Yeah.
It's a bad business model because you have to take up all the stage and then you also need all the stands. So it's like, who's going to come see the show?
Yeah.
Anyway, band logistics. Thanks, Ryan, for
what'd you think of the song, Kevin?
You know, so here's the thing. It's like, I have not been saturated with that track. Like, I didn't know it. And I don't know. I mean, I honestly think it's fine. Like
that's mostly how, like, I am about it. Like,
I'm not
a good hook.
I'm not averse to it, but I can totally see how the
video is just fucking obnoxious.
The whole song is pretty much fucking obnoxious.
Yeah, let me put it this way: like, if I were working in a place where that was on repeat, it's like, so I have mentioned on this podcast before that I have started but not gotten very far in a book that talks about like sort of how pop hits are put together. And one of the things that the guy says, like, in the first few pages of that book is, like, his kid turns on, like, he typically, as he's driving his kid to school, listens to his own music. And then one day, his kid put on his own station that was totally different than his own. He thought, okay, I'm just going to go with it. Like, I'm not going to be that dad that makes him always listen to my stuff. And what he figured out over time was that top 40 stations don't play top 40 material. They play, like, you know, it's like top 12. And so, like,
yes,
yeah,
that's correct.
And so in this case, it's like, you hear something like this and it sounds like, oh, this could potentially be dropped into the repetition bucket. And that's how hate starts and love starts. And so the people that are going to love it will run with it and then go buy that record, which is what they want, or the you know, whatever, the MP3. And then, the rest of us,
I think there's a case to be
might be averse.
I think there's a case to be made for, we may be averse, but I think there are a lot of people in the world that, you said, there's love it and the hate it bucket. But I think
I'm pretty ambivalent about this song.
And like, I'm at
60-65% like
level. You miss what I'm saying, but then there are a lot of people in the middle that are ambivalent to it, and they're a lot of times their liking of the song or disliking of the song will be in direct proportion to how many times they hear it. So you'll like sometimes you're at one or two times and you'll immediately dislike it or love it. And then you have, I think the great majority of people are somewhat, you know, ambivalent.
My 4-year-old sings this chorus ad nauseum.
Oh,
that does
yeah.
not surprise
I
me.
I think I know which bucket you fall in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Well, I do think I started out higher in my liking of this song.
Tell you what's the video?
That's definitely like dipped down the graph considerably. But I liked it more before I saw the video. But like each subsequent listen, it comes down a little bit.
Right, and that's kind of what I meant when I was saying
it's like really fucking catchy. Immediately catchy.
It's a very catchy, but there are a lot of catchy melodies. I think at the end of the day that come from very distasteful, make me want to punch the person that wrote it in the face type of songs.
Is it also, let me interject here, is it also that you are, maybe everybody at this table is like a little bit suspicious of anthems? Like, do you feel like, because
this band
like,
could tour with fun.
Yeah, it feels like they could be a supporting act for fun.
That might be part of it. It's definitely musical. I will say this, I want to say one thing about this before I lose this train of thought. What I did appreciate about the video was that the rest of the band members, if there are actual band members, looked like genuine,
actual musicians,
kind of the freaks, like a little bit, like normal musicians, like the big guy that's playing the keys, the drummer, the violin player. They look like people that are just along for the ride, or just not along for the ride. But does that make sense?
Are there to actually?
They just
play
look
instruments?
Like normal musicians.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just look like normal people.
Yeah, and the rest of it's kind of like a trip to Burning Man.
Yeah, there's a freak show going on.
It could be like that. That's based on a real story about a good friend that died, and we're completely mocking that. But I mean,
you could
turn his death into a humongous spectacle that deserves to be judged one way or the other. I think
there's somebody dressed up as an astronaut and like all kinds of like carnival-esque characters, and then they also are.
Yeah, it's pretty
walking
annoying.
A casket.
It's pretty annoying.
No, I went into that liking the song, and then when I saw the video, I was like, man, I just fucking want to punch that guy. And I haven't been in a fight since I was in fifth grade. Like, I don't have a lot of violent
impulses.
Yeah,
Ryan, I don't think when you say you feel like you would have punched that guy, I don't think in reality you're like going to try to look him up and be like, let's meet in the backyard behind the school.
I wish somebody else would punch that guy.
Order an old-fashioned first, and once the guy made it, then he'd punch
the guy would like show up with this weird fucking big like drum major band helmet. Like,
it was one thing we haven't talked about is that it did look like the there was a variation on the bird mask.
Yeah, no, that showed up.
That showed up in that video.
Oh, and also, that same mask was like it was a variation on a mask that was in Eyes Wide Shut, right?
Yeah, Ant Spy versus Spy. Yeah,
well,
comes
now
full
it's
circle.
All just 100% weird. So,
so should we do a mixtape show in a couple weeks, or do you want to not do that?
No, I totally do.
I think we should. I think it's about the time of the year to do one.
We'll do a fun mashup of a bunch of different stuff, and in the meantime, there's lots of other good. Somebody likes it to come. And Rye, thanks for all your efforts tonight.
Oh, well, thank you, Kevin.
Aww, like, you guys are so sweet.
It's brotherly love,
Mark,
man.
Mark, thank you for picking this record.
Yeah, thank you guys for talking about it.
Hey, Shane, thanks for being a part of all this.
I'm just
thanks
happy
for powering
here.
Through.
Kevin?
Shane has had a headache this entire show, and he has
thanks
powered
for all
through.
Your gratitude.
Yeah.
All right. This all sounds good. All right. Before it gets too long in the tooth here, let's get out of here. I'm Shane.
Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd take it so hard.
How did you expect me to take it?
Hey, if you got a question or a comment or a suggestion or all of them.
Requests.
Yes, any of that stuff. Hit us up at messagesomebody@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. All right, thanks.